We talk a lot on this podcast about chess improvement, but when it comes to improving your hiring processes, Indeed is the platform you need. Indeed has over 350 million global monthly visitors, and it has a matching engine that helps you find quality work candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with your candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Years ago, when I was running a chess teaching business, I found it hard to find good help, and I had to go through a lot of back and forth to even screen potential candidates. Indeed allows you to do those things efficiently in one place. Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed for hiring, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of Perpetual Chess will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility if you go to Indeed.com/chess. Just go to Indeed.com/chess right now, and you'll be supporting our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast, Indeed.com/chess. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, everyone. I am Ben Johnson, and this is the Perpetual Chess Podcast. Perpetual Chess is a weekly interview show where top chess players, authors, content creators, and accomplished amateurs discuss their careers and share stories and chess improvement tips. Perpetual Chess is a part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network, and we'd like to give special thanks to our presenting chess education sponsor, Chessable.com. For more information about the show, you can go to PerpetualChessPod.com. But without further ado, let's get to the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Perpetual Chess. We are here with a friend of the pod. I finally managed to wrangle him again. Popular Chess 24 commentator, noted opening theoretician, Chessable author, member, three-time member of Magnus Carlsen's World Championship Preparation Team, two-time champion of the Thailand Open, and five-time guest of Perpetual Chess, Grandmaster Jan Gustafsson. Oh, and podcaster, Grandmaster Jan Gustafsson. What's happening?
Thanks, Ben. Quite an introduction. Glad to be back.
So excited to finally have you. All it took was for you to make a podcast where you're going to steal all my listeners. And now I can welcome you back to the show.
Yeah. So how do we make it through 90 minutes of me yelling, check the chicken chess? I don't even know what it's called. The Chicken Chess Club podcast. It's very exciting.
Yeah, I'm super excited, honestly. Obviously, in addition to counting you as a friend, I'm a fan of all your content. And obviously, podcast is my native medium. And I mean, you lined up your friends, Laurent Fressonnet and Peter Hein Nielsen, fellow Team Magnus members, to talk about the chess news, riff on the chess news every week. I could not be more excited.
Yeah, but we think of you as Bane when it comes to podcasting. Like, we might adjust to the darkness, that is audio, but you were born in it, so we're not here to compete.
Thanks, yeah, and I think of it that way too, and I also think, you know, time will tell if I'm right about this or not, but I worry that you guys are a little bit too successful to maintain a podcast consistently. I mean, Peter Hein working with Magnus constantly, Laurent also frequently on call, you know, just trying to catch up with your content, you know, is a full-time job, so... So I'm rooting for you guys because I greatly enjoyed the first two episodes, but I worry that your schedules may pick up at some point and hopefully you guys can continue.
There's no one busier than us. Like today when we recorded, Peter said he was very excited. Golf season had started in Lithuania, so he's busy playing golf. Laurent is on holidays in the south of France. It's got to be very rough to find an hour every week.
I don't know. I mean, Magnus is going to have various events, so we will see. But I'm excited. So let's, of course, we got to hear about the origins of this project. I'm guessing this was someone inside the Play Magnus Corporation. Of course, Chess24, for whom you do a lot of commentary, is owned by Play Magnus, Magnus Carlsen, and other investors company. So did it take convincing, or were you like, oh, yeah, let's do it?
No, this is just us, actually. It has nothing to do with the group or anybody. Basically, I think we enjoy each other, but in small doses. Like we've been around each other quite a bit in training camps, working for Magnus, but there is this running gag, which is not really a gag, that we've never come together without anybody paying for it. So this is a first, and hopefully, of course, we'll make millions on the podcast, but it's sort of fun to catch up with the guys once per week, tease Laurent about all the topics he's uncomfortable with, like me, like him ordering a lot of white bread in Thai restaurants. That's my main source of joy these days. So no, it's been good, but there's no corporate master plan behind it yet.
Okay. Interesting. I mean, again, I'm super excited about it. I mean, jokes aside, you guys are so plugged in the chess world. I mean, so for listeners to have access to the kind of information, I don't know what you guys are going to actually reveal on the show, but I mean, to have such experts of the field with so much knowledge of top level chess is exciting. So I'm excited for both the banter and the events analysis. So I guess we should talk about some events. I mean, you're going to be talking about them to death on Chicken Chess Club. Subscribe on any podcast app. Be sure to give it a review, etc. But number one, of course, we have the candidates coming up. I'm sure you guys are planning a big preview. But briefly, Jan, who's going to win?
That's a tough question. Selfishly, I think need to root for Alireza to win, because then Magnus is more or less in the record that he might play that one, so we get another match. On the chess world would also probably be thrilled to see it. As for who's the favorite, I don't know. I've seen some odds that Alireza, Fabi, and Ding were more or less tied with the bookmakers, and I was a bit surprised that they don't seem to give Nepomniachtchi much of a chance, who should still be sitting on a lot of prep and won last time around. I guess you could argue it's less good for him if it's 14 games in a row, because he has a bit of a track record to slow down near the end of events. But I was a bit surprised he wasn't higher on people's list. So you just wanted to hear Alireza, right? I'm rambling.
Oh, so you're putting all your money on Nepo, is what I gather.
If there was any... I haven't done a lot of chess betting ever since you got me into basketball betting like 15 years ago. I retired from that game.
Okay. Yeah. And one of the things I watched that I've been waiting for this to come out. It's called Inside Team Magnus. You and your podcast co-hosts did this huge breakdown of the World Championship match, everything from being recruited to the team to assembling and, you know, going through all of the games. And I want to talk more about it later, but since you mentioned Magnus retiring, probably the question, or not retiring, not defending his world championship title, probably the topic that you'll get asked about more than any, and you'll talk about on the podcast more than any. So we're not going to rehash that too much, other than to say that you guys seem to be in consensus that if Alireza doesn't win, it's around 80% that Magnus doesn't hold his title. Does that make you sad like it does the rest of us, Jan?
First of all, my guess is as good as yours. I think in this series you mentioned, we talked about it and we put quite a high number on it. I've seen a recent interview where, to me, it sounded like he was less secure about it. He still mentioned, yeah, he wasn't excited about the idea. But I would lower the number a bit from the 80% we gave there due to recent events. But I don't have a clue. Of course, from the outside, it sounds like, yeah, play a match for millions of dollars and stay the world champion is a good idea. But I can also sort of understand that the constant stress of, yeah, defining yourself through that world championship title and the process of, yeah, having to prepare for one specific opponent might be something that, yeah, well, he said he's not enjoying that much, but I really don't have a clue. Like, as chess fans and potentially Team Magnus members, obviously, I have some interest to see that match. I just called myself a chess fan. I should stop being phony.
chess
lover.
Yeah, I mean, I get it as well. 30 to 40% of his time probably is spent like deep in the world championship cycle. You know, if you're thinking 6 months of prep and then the actual match, and it's comes around every 2 years. This is a guy who can basically do whatever he wants otherwise. So it's, I understand, but nonetheless hope that he changes his mind, or that like Laurent has been saying, hope that, that Geary wins. But let me ask you this. I recently,
Laurent would never say he hopes that Geary wins.
Yeah. Sorry. I misspoke. But let me ask you this, Jan. I recently had your Bundesliga teammate, Michael Adams, on the pod, and he was talking, and he sounded fairly also sympathetic to Magnus's views, and like he wouldn't be opposed to some sort of mixed format, which of course has come up a lot over the years as a sort of alternative to the classical world championship, which I know makes some people shudder. But listen, Magnus is the boss. So my question to you, Jan, is if you think there's an elevated chance that he would not just say, okay, I'm not going to defend it, but actually might try to affect change in terms of like what we call the world championship?
I wouldn't know. I don't think we can read into his statements that he's using it as a way to put pressure to get to change the format. I think he's just being genuine that, yeah, about how he feels about it. I don't know. I'm a bit of a purist when it comes to the world championship matches. I sort of like the classical and the slower pace and the teams preparing and so on. But we'll take what we get, right? But yeah, to me, I think it's, well, fun is the wrong word, but such a defining event of the chess world and the legacy of the classical world champions and so on. So yeah, I'm the old man here saying, change nothing, play long classical matches.
Yeah, I mean, I actually agree with you, and I'm generally not like super into classical chess, but just for the world championship in particular, I love the spectacle. I love the training and stuff like your series on Chess 24 inside Team Magnus, you know, sort of in the spirit of books like the Anand Files, and From London to Elista, the sort of behind the scenes, you know, as you know from me asking you annoying questions in previous interviews and this one, that I can't get enough of that stuff. So I do hope that it continues.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm also there. I really am a chess fan when it comes to studying the ins and outs of the world championship matches and the history and the behind the scenes and so on. So I'm with you, but we're not sponsoring or partaking in the next world championship match yet, because I hear the adult improving is going well. So you never know. You never know where it's going to take us.
Yeah. Just making amazing strides. And on the topic of inside Team Magnus, we should say it's behind the Chess 24 paywall, which, by the way, can they still use Janistan, or is that just for Banter Blitz? Can they save on the $15 a month if they sign up or whatever?
What's Janistan? That's my Twitch channel. It has nothing to do with
it. Oh, I thought it was like a promo code. Okay.
Oh, yeah, that one exists as well. Oh, yeah, of course. See, I don't even know my own stuff. They can use the voucher code Janistan.
Yeah, so even if you only sign up for a month, of course you should sign up for more, but it's like 20 hours of content discussing the World Championship. And one of the things that I was curious about that you guys answered is sort of like when someone like you gets the invite. It sounded like Peter Hein Nielsen, and of course he heads the team, so he knows that he's a part of it. Laurent Fressonnet has been a member for a long time, so he was basically already doing some work for Magnus. But you guys said in the series that you were asked right after the candidates. So one thing I was wondering is, like, obviously noted opening theoretician, especially double king pawn and the marshal, which of course we saw in the world championship. So when you get asked to join the team, Jan, do you like immediately know that you're joining the team and you're going to be playing Magnus is going to be playing the marshal, or did that come later?
I love doing this stuff. So there's not really, I mean, it's the process itself is not that much fun sitting with some other nerds in badly lit Airbnbs or hotels and clicking on buttons. But since I'm such a fan of World Championships, there's not really a doubt in my mind that I want to be involved if I have a chance. So that didn't take long. As for the openings, I don't think I knew back then. I don't think Magnus knew back then what the game plan would be exactly. You always sort of hope, in my case, if you're more of an E4, E5 guy, that it will be my topics and not like in 2018, it was the Sveshnikov where you still do your clicking, but I know less and have less of a feel. So in order to be half useful, other than my great jokes, of course, you hope that it could be areas where I feel, whatever you want to call it, invested in or I know something, but I can't give you an exact timeline when the decision was made to go with E4, E5 and the marshal. I think it's part of the process. Of course, you have some rough idea early on, but then you have some options to go through and some stuff gets kicked out and some stuff gets brought back. So I don't know exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I found it interesting that Peter Hines said that he and Magnus had discussed the possibility of unveiling the Catalan as early as something like 2018 for this match or something like that. Like before they even knew who they were playing, they knew it was a possibility at some point.
I guess the Catalan is always sort of around, and it's also one of the main openings Magnus hasn't played regularly prior to the match. So I guess it's always looming. And also, if you don't play the Catalan and you want to play 1d4, you have a choice between knight f3, d5, knight c3, where black has like 18 decent options, or the Nimzo, which has had a great reputation for decades now. So the Catalan, yeah, it's hard to ignore, but even the Catalan, turns out, it's not winning by force. So it's very tough, as I'm sure we discussed in chess with white in general, to find something you can play for multiple games, because the deeper you go, usually black does hold.
Yeah, it's interesting. So, but I'm assuming with what you said about classical format, you're not ready to hop on the 960 train, despite the problems that white might have getting a significant edge.
Well, for people that mainly work as seconds opening theoreticians, I don't think chess 960 is a very tempting proposition. I'll sound biased because I am. But yeah, I don't like it as much. So many starting positions are weird. I greatly enjoy the process of looking at openings and seeing what changes and what can be done and what can't be done. Now you play h4 or a4 in every position. So I don't think it's dead and it's still evolving. But of course, it's true that at the World Championship level, with months to prepare, coming up with stuff for white is not easy.
Yeah, and we certainly weren't. I mean, obviously, there were stories involved, but like momentum possibly involved, but we certainly weren't lacking for decisive results in this World Championship. So I feel like that at least gives us license to put it off for another couple years and hope Magnus plays. But Jan, on the topic of openings, we have a question from another German Jan, FM Jan Peter Schmidt, Patreon supporter of the pod. Thank you for supporting Perpetual Chess, Jan. And he asks you, what is your initial reaction when you see the latest opening recommendation by I.M. Lawrence Trent, such as 1b6 as black or 1c3 as white?
I don't know. I have to admit, sometimes I'm a little behind in studying whatever Lawrence is currently proposing. I don't know. I think that's a good thing about the, whatever you want to call it, the chess market. That is big. Like, you can sell people junk, and I have to word it carefully here. No, obviously this is not meant for World Championship matches. But in chess in general, if you study whatever, even if it's e4, b6 or one knight c3, and you gain some advantage in knowledge, and I'm sure Lawrence is dedicated putting together the best tricks and traps that exist after e4, b6, I'm not sure what exactly those are, then it can help. So no, I'm a big fan of Lawrence's, and I'm sure his courses are great.
That was a very diplomatic answer, Jan. Well done. I mean,
I did use junk early on. So
that's true, but you recovered nicely.
Thank you.
And you know, it's come up on the podcast a bit that, you know, for us mortals, speaking for me, not for you, of course, you know, if I get an edge, I'm not going to convert it. You know, it's hard to get an edge even at the top level. So what's the difference? You know, just go knight c3, go b6, have fun, you know a few things. Everything's going to be okay.
Your kids. Even at my level, not at the world championship level, but when I'm sitting there in Bundesliga, which I'm sure you'll have many exciting questions about, and I'm playing the next Italian, and I'm thinking, yeah, I know you'll go d3, c3, knight bd2, knight f1. Sometimes I think to myself, maybe you should have played e4, b6, you know, like mix it up a little. So these things have a right to exist even.
Yeah. I did see your Bundesliga games and look forward to going deep on them. But first, we have another listener question. This one is from longtime supporter of the pod, Jerry Wells. Shout out to Jerry. And Jerry asks you, Jan, what is the stupidest opening idea that works?
I don't know. It's a strange question because to my mind, if something works, it's not stupid, right? Also, we could get into how you define works. Like, I'm not sure you lost after e4, b6, or if it's still a draw. You could argue that still works if black draws with best play. So I wouldn't know. To me, it's a contradiction, because if it's stupid, then it won't work. And if it works, it's not stupid. So that's my way of dodging the question. I can't think of any fun position.
Okay, yeah, I certainly can't on my own. All right, Jan, we are going to take a break and hear from our sponsors, and we will be back with more fun banter. Perpetual Chess is brought to you in part by Chessable.com. Of course, by now, I hope you all know that Chessable uses its proprietary move trainer technology to quiz you on the chess sequences that you need to remember. Often, it will be an opening sequence, a tactical pattern, or even a crucial end game. And they've got courses to help you with all aspects of your game. Some of their new courses include Grandmaster Romain Edouard's English Breakfast, which is the reverse Sicilian against the English, and the Deceptively Simple French Exchange by I.M. Sam Collins. So many more new courses coming out practically every day. So be sure to go to Chessable.com and check out both their free and their for purchase offerings.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And we are back. And Jan, I do want to pick up the topic of the Bundesliga. I've been going over your games with a fine-tooth comb. 6 games this weekend. Busy schedule, first of all. And obviously, we've talked before in previous interviews, you're on the juggernaut team, Baden-Baden, with Maxime Vachier-Legrave, Mickey Adams, Rustem Kazymjanov, Wojciech, and the list goes on. So I want your personal state of Jan's chess game, but also how's the team doing, Jan?
First of all, no, it was only 2 games this weekend. It's always like 2 games per weekend, but it's been with 3 weekends in at this point. So, yeah, I think I played 6 games total. Where to start? You mentioned the team list. First of all, there's a lot of big guns. I'm not sure what they're doing, but that we haven't seen much this season yet. I don't know our list exactly, but should have like Aronian, Giri, Vichy, Caruana, lot of guys there. We might need some help because I'm not sure how familiar your listeners are with Bundesliga. But it's played on 8 boards. And normally I'm the token German. Well, that's at least how it used to be, showing up on board 8. And last weekend I was on board 4, which is very high. You get to play strong grandmasters. I'm not cut out for this. Baden-Baden. Bringing the big guns. And seriously, yeah, I haven't played much chess, well, the last 10 years, but especially during the pandemic and then restarting when you're used to looking at chess with an engine. It's rough. Like, my head calculates very slowly. I'm indecisive. I need way too much time to decide on any random move. I'm not sure, you're probably not as negative as me, but the self-loathing I feel during every chess game that, yeah, what an idiot I am, or that I missed this and missed that, I don't think is a very productive mindset. And it tends to be worse when I'm sort of out of practice. So usually I was gearing up in Bundesliga to play my annual tournament, the Thailand Open. And at that point, at least, I had some games under my belt. But yeah, it's been rough. I don't know the result. Okay, it's business as usual. I think I made 4 draws and won 2 games against mainly weaker opposition, but I'm leaving a lot of chances, and I hate myself more than usual playing. That's normally my metric, which is not good.
Yeah, I saw the long draw that ended up in a rook end game. I think that one was from this weekend, right?
Yeah, that was this Sunday.
Yeah, sorry to dredge that up. But what you're discussing is very relatable. So when you have that experience, Jan, do you say to yourself, Jan, that's it, I'm getting back to work? Or do you just say, like, I got to avoid playing these in the future?
No, I kind of like playing these. And in order to keep doing it in the future, I should more or less maintain my level. But you know how it is with chess study, or I'm not sure how it is for you. I do tell myself, especially when I'm annoyed, okay, it's time to sit down and study some new openings and do some serious stuff. But sometimes then life catches up, you know, there's other things to do. So it's difficult for me to find proper time to study for myself, especially when I know, okay, I might have 2 Bundesliga games in the next 6 months, but other than that, there's not that much happening. But I do feel this, yeah, when I feel like I'm playing too badly, like I have now, this competitive urge that, yeah, I have to do something. But that telling myself I have to do something, from saying that to going, okay, where do I find the 3 hours per day to study the night off? Like, that's still a big step, because you can always go on Twitch and stream Vampire Survivors, where you can kill a lot of vampires instead of studying the night off. So it's trade-offs.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. I read this quote from Mickey's interview, which I thought was wise, that, yeah, sometimes you don't need to do anything special, just keep the game going, and people will make mistakes. I think a lot of it is just mindset. If you reach a more peaceful state of mind and just sit there and make moves instead of all this, I will sound too crazy if I describe it in detail, but instead of all this self-loathing and time wasting that goes on in my head while playing, I'm not sure how it can be practiced other than practice. But it's really a thing, and I would guess I'm not alone, that even psychologically, there's so much one can improve. The problem is, in theory, we know all these things, but then I'm still sitting there spending 30 minutes on a random move, hating myself for not having thought about that earlier. So yeah, it's chess is tough.
The struggle is real, yeah. I mean, again, very relatable. And yeah, I also found that quote from Mickey, you know, quite striking because he's so strong. So, I mean, the people he's describing doing nothing against are probably, like, you know, 24 to 2600s, you know. So for a 2100 like me, let alone anyone lower rated listening, like, your opponents, even though it seems, as you mentioned in your banter blitzes, people are getting better than ever, faster than ever, people still screw up. But it's hard not to get in your own head. And if you're in time trouble, when they do screw up, it can be hard to capitalize. As you say, it's a challenge.
Yeah, you also got to give them a chance to screw up, which I think is what Mickey was saying. Because sometimes, yeah, if you're in too impatient a state of mind, you want to force the issue and you get upset if you're not better after 25 moves or whatever. I mean, really, all you should be thinking about is, okay, let's make a decent move, keep the game going. And I think he's right that the chances do come. I've had, even with my current skill level and mindset, I've had the chances every game. You just gotta, yeah, be there and be calm to convert them once they show up.
So you're gonna start meditating or what?
I should start meditating. Do you meditate? Like, I think everybody agrees it's a good thing, but I don't know a lot of people that actually.
Yeah, I have had a regular meditation practice. I don't right now. So, but similar to studying chess, tomorrow could be the day that I wake up and the switch flips.
It's similar to everything, right? To working out, running, sleeping enough, all the good stuff. We, I guess, know in practice are good things, but do you always do it? You're jacked, of course, so I know you're a huge gym rat, but
no, I do my super slow jogs and that's about it. I'm no Greg Shahadi.
Speaking of Greg, is he listening to this? We already praised classical chess. I don't want to have to read like a 3,000 word blog entry of Greg explaining why we're wrong and rapid is the future.
I think you're safe. I don't think he actually listens. I mean, if you fire a few shots, he might catch wind of it, but he won't listen on his own. So, so you mentioned if you were to study 3 hours a day, you mentioned the Nydorf, but like, what would you do? Would you, dare I ask, do like calculation training or just try to have, I saw you played 3-E5, like E5 against E4. In all three Bundesliga games, like, would you try to broaden that? What would you work on?
I think the quick fix really is to stop mainly playing E4, E5, because it's just negative EV from me. In my typical Bundesliga game, when I'm black against, let's say, a 2400, so I'm whatever, 240 points higher rated, E4, E5 and the Italian or a Spanish mainline, which is drawish enough, I don't think that's maximizing my expectations. Like I said, I still do think that you get chances, and I was getting the chances in these games. But I had one year, a couple of years back, where I felt comfortable playing the Dragon, and any sort of sharp Sicilian, I think, gives better expected value. Not that they're better openings. E4, E5 is great. But for me, it would mainly be trying to maximize my results, especially with black against lower rated opposition. So that's sort of the quick fix. Doesn't have to be the Dragon or the Nydorf, but just, you know, become a little less predictable and having something a little sharper. But then you start looking at stuff, and then the Caro Kann, it's usually 0-50s while I get my equality in the E4, E5. Wow. So it's, now Caro Kann is a good opening, but you know, once you're trying to mix it with black, then of course you pay a price objectively. And that's a price I should be paying, because I think my EV would go up, but it's rough, especially if you mainly work as a quote-unquote theoretician, trying to equalize or finding the best moves. So yeah, that's the spot where I would have to put some stuff in. Other than that, all the things you're saying, or I'm sure I should listen to more Adult Improver episodes, but I'm sure that have been debated here in great length, solving exercises, analyzing your own games, I'm sure, endgame study always pays off. I'm sure there's a lot of great stuff to do. But yeah, in practice, I'd study some random opening after 1-E4, if I were being honest.
Yeah, I mean, if we were 2600, we would too. So totally understood. And well, you mentioned,
I want to stay 2600, though. So yeah, I should do something.
That's hard these days. Staying anything is hard. So the Thailand Open, you mentioned in the Banter Blitz, you were thinking of playing. Now it sounds like maybe you're having second thoughts. Are you going to become
Never.
The three-time Thailand Open champion, Jan?
I'm trying to only win every 10 years, so okay. That I won the last one, but now there's been a 2-year break. So no, I still have some years, but if it's happening, I'll find a way to show up. No question about it. Yeah.
Excellent. And that's October. So you got time to get your life in order.
Oof, I don't know. I've tried for more than half a year.
And on the topic of chess improvement, we have a question from Neil Bruce. Jan, do you know who Neil Bruce is?
Yeah, from Twitter.
Yeah. Okay. Legendary improver. Speaking of which, been on the pod, of course. Most listeners are familiar with Neil. Shout out to Neil. Thanks for supporting the pod, Neil. And he says, and you're going to love this question, Jan. He says he's a huge Jan fan. So thanks for all you do in the chess world. And his question is, what advice would you give to a 2000 level adult chess improver about how to create a competitive opening repertoire for OTB tournaments?
I don't know. Like I said, I'm a 26 something adult improver who also should work on that. I think everybody's different. It's going to be a long blah, blah, blah. It depends sort of answer. But you have all the resources out there, right? I mean, you have good chess books. You have good chessable courses. Nowadays, you have good engines. You can go on any chess website and check your games with the opening tree and what the engines say directly after the blitz game, so you don't even need to use chess base and remote engines and all the complicated stuff. Therefore, I think the tools are out there. For me, it's very useful when I'm playing that I've done the work beforehand, which I more often than not haven't, but you lose so much time and energy if you try to prepare for every single game if you're actually playing a tournament. So ideally, you want to have some sort of database wherever you keep it that's organized with your opening, so that before the game, you just have to click through something quickly and not try to reinvent the wheel, which I guess most people, me included, often are doing. Like, oh, I play this guy, he plays that opening. Let me quickly analyze what I should do against this and that. And how you create that base, I think it's up to you. I'm not so dependent on courses or chess books because I feel with a strong engine and a database, I can get the results sort of quickly. But it usually helps, or I guess it helps, to start with a good course. And yeah, then putting that into your format, which, once again, big scientist on studying. But I guess it also helps to convert it into something that's your own other than just clicking through stuff.
Okay. Yeah. Useful advice. And I'm guessing based on your own predilections, like, and Neil is someone who's primarily focused most recently on middle games, but like, you know, he's been aware.
What does it mean? I never understand what it means. Like, everyone talks about it. Yeah. I want to improve my middle games. I just don't just want the boring theory. Like, how do you work on
middle
Neil
games? Is the
I'm always curious.
We did a standalone podcast about positional puzzle books. Neil and I. So he's, you know, he's of the school of thought that, like, basically you want to drill patterns of, like, you know, good knight against bad bishop and, you know, attacking with opposite, you know, attacking on the dark squares and, you know, whatever positional themes you want to drill those just in the way that you would drill like an opening line or a tactical theme. So as we've talked about before, we're all just guessing. No one really knows, but I mean, Neil being in his 50s, I think feels like he needs to repeat things more and that he can't take things for granted that someone like you or even me who learned chess as a kid slash teen, might absorb the patterns without as much effort.
Yeah, I think there's truth to that. Of course, there's also the danger with patterns that chess is a very, very concrete game and they can sometimes lead you astray. So if I had to choose, but yeah, it's also different because, as you said, I probably subconsciously know a lot of the patterns from my childhood or whenever. But if I had to choose, I would usually put a premium on learning how to calculate better rather than drilling patterns in middle games. But of course, it's all so interconnected that it's, for me, very hard to give specific advice.
Also, I think for adults, at least over the age of 30, I think calculation is the hardest thing to improve.
For sure. Yeah.
So, but yeah,
no,
maybe
same here.
Maybe it reaps the biggest rewards despite that. Jan, I'm amazed we got you to do some like red meat chess improvement talk this time. It only took five interviews.
No bigger expert on adult improvement than me, whose rating hasn't changed in like 20 years.
Well, yeah, I mean, mine's gone down, so I'm right there with you. It's
yeah,
it's quite
I'm also struggle. Just trying to hang in there.
Yeah, it's rough. So I'll ask you something I asked Jen Chahadi. Is there anything you are trying to improve at? You know, you're known for your comedy stylings. Now you've got your podcast. You mentioned this video game. I can't keep up with the video games, but is there anything you're really grinding hard on now, Jan?
Let me think. No, in general, when I work, I try to do well, as dumb as it sounds, but also there it's tricky for me to improve. For example, I'm fishing for compliments here, but I hate my cadence when speaking English or when doing commentary in English. I'm aware I'm a pretty good English speaker.
Amazing.
But English I do speaking. Sound, yeah, I think, but I do sound so strange, and it's not something that I can change, you know, this weird rhythm I have when speaking. So I'm trying to shake those with hard work, like listening to lots of comedians talking about the finer points of comedy on various podcasts, but so far to no avail. What am I grinding? I'm trying to make my Twitch channel, another great plug, which is in German, an even bigger success than it is, but mainly just by sitting there and, yeah, idly looking at the camera, playing some chess games. So I don't know. We talked about the gym. That's usually a project that comes and goes. I had a good gym routine for a while, but then I got sick. You have little kids as well. You know how they are. They bring home all these sicknesses. You can't work out, and then one has to restart. So that's on and off going, I would say. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's all right. Gotta make money, Ben. I'm not sure how it is. We're old at this point. We're just, you know, trying to hang in there.
I hear you. Yeah, it's like Mickey said, you know, just try to survive and hope something good happens. I miss your Instagram videos on your walks to the gym.
no bigger Insta influencer than me.
But how's the Twitch channel going? You know, obviously not speaking German, I don't keep up with that. Is that like becoming like a legit thing for you? Are you devoting a lot of time to it?
You could argue I'm devoting too much time to it. I kind of enjoy it. I do it when the kids are in bed, so 9:30 or whatever my time. I just sit there and play dumb games or chess. I enjoy it. Like, you don't feel the need, or maybe that's my mistake, the need to perform. It's a bit different than when I'm commentating a big tournament or whatever. But you can sort of be yourself. The problem is I discovered that myself, I'm not that exciting. Like, I want to lie on the couch, eat pizza, and watch a TV show. So this advice, just be yourself, be authentic. I'm not sure how well it works for me.
Oh, come on.
But seriously, no, I enjoy it, but it's taking up too much of my time if we're talking, like, yeah, business rewards. But it is fun to do. It's a bit addictive, I think.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I mean, I feel like the ROI should be good for you because you're such a chess. I mean, you're a chess star globally, but especially in Germany.
Yeah, somehow my global following is not as great at the German language.
Who's the biggest German chess streamer?
Oh, there's my boy Kugelbuch. He's huge. Do you know Kugelbuch?
I'm not familiar. No.
Ah, you should check out Kugelbuch.
Okay. And what do you think differentiates him? Why has he found an audience?
He is like 1600, so he's much more relatable. Oh, he's going to get upset. I'm sure he's like 1800. No, you know, it's a young... I sound so miserable. I don't want to come across so miserable. But what I struggle with is modern internet lingo. Maybe you can teach me all the emotes and Monka S, Kappa, Poggers. So I'm still struggling to.
Yeah, I'm always amazed
to learn the lingo.
When I check out Hikaru, I mean, he is a bit younger than us, but not like so much. But he's got his own language, you know. He seems so native to Twitch, and yeah, for me, it's I'm definitely more of a written word / spoken word type consumer of information.
Mm-hmm. Author? No, I don't know. I think anybody can do. Can do whatever they want there. And like I said, I'm very much enjoying it. But yeah, it's become a serious time investment once the kids are asleep. So I'm not sure how great it is for family life. But other than that, yeah, it's fun to do.
Gotcha. All right. Well, Jan, we're going to bring it back to your other project, the Chicken Chess Club. But first, we're going to take one more break and hear from our sponsors. I've been digging deeper, looking at my analytics on aimchess.com, specifically trying to improve my time management at Blitz Chess, as you guys have heard me discuss before. They have this tab called Long Thinking, where you can look to see what the outcome of moves where you spend a lot of time is. And for me, it turns out those moves tend to be better than average compared to my rating peers. So my issue is I just need to play a little bit faster every single move. It's not so much about avoiding the long things. And there's tons of insights you can get like that from aimchess.com. You can check it out for free, explore all phases of your game with actionable drills that you can then review and download games where issues arise. So check it out for free. And if you subscribe, use the promo code perpetual30 on aimchess.com.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
All right, Jan. So Chicken Chess Club. Obviously, we're both, you know, avid podcast fans, listen to podcasts across the spectrum, often not related to chess. So I'm enjoying, of course, features such as the Chicken of the Week. But let's hear it, Jan. When you're sitting down and you and Laurent and Peter Hein agree to do this podcast, how do you come up with a feature like that? Do you guys have more in the offing? Because, of course, I have some suggestions.
I don't like the Chicken of the Week category, because it's the Chicken Chess Club podcast. I'm an outspoken chicken in chess, taking great pride in trying not to make the game exciting and minimize losing chances. So to mock people for being Chicken of the Week, I feel is just wrong. It should be praising them. And there seems to be some disagreement there. I do enjoy the tales from the training camps, but that's mainly because I take, as I said, great pleasure out of Laurent's interactions with mainly waiters and waitresses and various French restaurants also. Yeah, there's been some incidents on nude beaches. So I'm always seeing how far I can push him with that one. But yeah, I would guess as a Jesselnik listener, you want Recommendation Station, right?
Yeah, I want Recommendation Station, yes. And I should explain for listeners, last time Jan was on the pod, one of the podcasts he recommended is called the Jesselnik and Rosenthal Vanity Project. I was not familiar at the time. I got into it. I listened for a while. I have to admit, they need to edit it. I should talk, but I've fallen off a bit, but I do love their recurring features, such as Recommendation Station, where they recommend something. So, but is that going to happen, Jan?
I don't know. I would have to check with you or Neil Bruce or someone before every show to tell me what the good chess books are.
Oh, no. Forget chess. Save it for the end and just recommend anything. You know, we want the comedy recommendations and the, you know, books, video games, whatever.
Yeah, I agree. It's a good category. We should probably change the name. Don't want to get sued by Jesselnik. He seems
litigious.
Petty.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. And then, of course, I enjoy, Laurent speculating about Alireza. So I want every week an update of Laurent, you know, pontificating about what Alireza might be doing. Now, obviously, when he's in a tournament, we know. But otherwise, it just seems he keeps such a low profile. So I'd like that to be a recurring feature. What do you think?
I agree. The problem is, I think Laurent is not telling us everything he knows. He's saying, yeah, but I'm talking to the guy privately in confidence. I can't give you all the details. I have a feeling he knows. I have a feeling they go for long walks in the in the night of Paris and talk about their deepest dreams, fears, desires, all their team members, their strategy for the candidates, but he doesn't seem willing to share publicly. Then why do an Alireza themed podcast to begin with? But I fully agree. I'm very disappointed. I never get much out of Peter when it comes to Magnus, and I get very little out of Laurent when it comes to Alireza as well. We should explain Alireza, the world, I guess he's number three now because Ding is back to number two. He recently moved to Chartres, and Laurent would criticize my pronunciation, in France next to Paris, but he hasn't been seen much. He hasn't played in like 5 months. I think he's going to play Bucharest now. And of course, we need info. What's he doing? Who's he working with? Where is he? How's life in Chartres? We want to know.
Couldn't agree more. Yeah. And, you know, with writing, they say you have to bleed on the page. So you got to tell Peter Hein and Laurent, listen, if you guys are going to do this podcast, can't hold anything back. We need to know everything. We need to know, you know, all Magnus's, everything Magnus is doing that Peter Hein is keeping secret, etc. So I know you've got some secrets too, Jan.
I couldn't agree more other than my secrets. I'm in an open but very boring book. I don't know anybody.
And then you and Peter Hein are both dads. Does Laurent have kids?
He does have two daughters, yeah.
Oh,
see, even that he's trying to hide from us. Now it's out there.
So you guys could do to steal another bit, like the parent corner. You could discuss your children. I'm sure a lot of people are going to get annoyed because they actually want you guys to talk about chess. But listen, it's a weekly show. Not that much stuff happens every single week.
There's nothing happening. Yeah. You can join. You have two kids as well, right? Breaking news here. I know you keep your private life private.
Yeah, no secret. And yeah, my kids, their chess careers are floundering, although they don't seem interested. I'm sure you get asked all the time, but how's Nelly's game?
I think she more or less knows the rules, but as most self-loathing chess players, I'm not really pushing it very much on her. She's more into drawing, and I don't even know what it's called in English, all these weird things she's doing with like pearls, putting together pictures. She's busy. Can't bother her with chess.
Gotcha. And how old is
she? Do you have these fantasies about your kids? Because I have that fantasy. I haven't lived on it yet, but they have to realize my unfulfilled dreams, right? And if she starts training chess for like, I don't know, 5-6 hours a day, she's five. And at this point, she can crush women's chess, no? I'll give her all my openings.
She's not over the hill yet, like the rest of us.
That's what I think as well. No, I guess I'm too much of an anti-authoritarian hippie to fulfill that fantasy. But no, she hasn't shown any particular interest in chess so far.
Gotcha. Yeah, my son is nine, and his favorite thing is baseball, but he's reaching this interesting age where he's starting to realize people are better than him. Just more athletic, which was inevitable. But it's interesting as a parent because, like, on the one hand, you want to push him to be as good as he can, especially if this is the thing that he enjoys most. But on the other hand, like, he's not wrong, you know? So Nelly,
where do you stand on steroids?
Everything in moderation, right? I'm against them for nine-year-olds at least.
All right.
So
give it 2 years. Yeah,
I mean, it's interesting because you get this parental instinct to really push them. But really, like, I mean, you know, he's more likely to be in the stats department of a baseball team than on the field long term. So Jan, what else do we have to discuss? I, of course, have a couple more World Championship questions for you if you don't have anything else burning to bring up.
By all means, it's your show.
Okay. Well, okay, number one, so obviously you guys had that video ready to go revealing the team on Team Magnus once Magnus won the match. Daniil Dubov, Jordan Van Forest, perhaps the surprise participant, along with you and Laurent. Stationed in Thailand, and Peter Hein, of course, was with Magnus in Dubai. But I want the behind the scenes on the celebration. Of course, Peter Hein discussed what he and Magnus did a little bit, although, as you say, probably omitted some details. But what was the Thailand celebration like once your boy came through?
It was a bit impromptu, because I don't think we expected him to win that. Black game is boring. Italian, but I'm trying to recall, I think. We had dinner, we talk about all this stuff in detail in the series, but usually we would be done with our work at like 4:30 local time. Then, yeah, I would go for a nap and we'd go for dinner at whatever, 6:30 or something. Then the games would start, I think, 7:30 our time. And we would sometimes catch the end of it during dinner, and then people would go back to work or to watch the games in Laurent's room. I think I was sitting with Jordan. Maybe we had a water after dinner. Yeah, living the life. While the other guys left. And then when it looked like Nepomniachtchi was starting to lose it, or at some point he blundered with G3 or something, I was still hanging out with Jordan. I can't recall if it was a rest day the next day or if we were just being lazy. I guess it was a rest day the next day. But anyway, then we texted Laurent and Daniel to come over and join the festivities. Has to be said, though, that it was Thailand was a beautiful location where we were in Phuket, but it was still very much Corona lockdown rules, which made it tough to find a place to go to in the world to begin with that met our demands, like had to be in Thailand. And it had to be, I'm joking about the Thailand part, but it had to be, in a time zone where we could work during the days and ideally it's warm. And it was very tough to find, we scanned the whole world to find a place where you could go, or at least you could plan going in whenever it was October, November 2021. Because of the COVID regulations, Thailand was a grind as well. But in the end, we made it there. Where does my story go? Ah, yeah, they had a, how do you call this? Every place had to shut at 11 p.m. So curfew. we couldn't, a curfew, yeah. So we couldn't do as much excessive partying as you would usually expect from exhausted chess seconds. But, yeah, you know, we had a drink, we had a lovely walk on the beach, talked about our feelings. Like some of the guys were thinking about catching earlier flights back, which obviously seemed insane to me because I still had a week, you know, to stick around. I planned with tie breaks and everything. And then we had a nice dinner at a way too expensive French restaurant the next evening where Laurent had all kinds of different fromage for dessert. So we had a good time. In general, we had a nice atmosphere there, but there's no excessive partying, I can report.
Not as wild as one might have guessed, especially for the youngsters, Dubov and Van Forest.
Yeah, kids these days.
And I get the sense from both watching the inside team Magnus and interviews and stuff, the whole team seemed like they were pretty confident going into the match. Is that, I mean, even like filming the video and having it ready to go to release who was on the team, like did you feel good about Magnus's chances the whole time?
Well, it helps working for Magnus, who, well, to my mind, is always the favorite and so far has always found a way to come through. So I think it mainly comes with that from my earlier exploits. You might recall, I'm not supremely confident about chess stuff usually. But, yeah, we're confident going into the match. Doesn't mean you don't freak out about opening things all the time, basically, and you feel like we're not ready and this is not ready to go and we don't know what to do there. That comes with the territory. But I would guess you have this belief, which is not so difficult to have when working for Magnus, that he'll find a way to come through if we don't screw up too badly. As for this video, you mean the one from the training camp in Spain? Yeah, I don't think anybody had much to do with that. But clearly, Magnus is also confident when he does have these things ready to go and happy to be published.
Gotcha. Now, and you guys do a good job keeping the team secret. You know, people can make educated guesses, but you manage to sort of have a lower profile when world championship season comes around, but no one knows for sure. what's going on, who's working with Magnus, and obviously with, like, you know, someone with your knowledge of certain openings, that's important information. So if Magnus, say Ali Reza wins, or Magnus changes his mind and is defending his title, are we still going to have the Chicken Chess Club, Jan? I'm concerned about that.
I think it has to happen weekly. And since Laura and Peter Heine are very coy about revealing any information about Magnus or true. Ali Reza in general, I don't really see what changes, except for maybe some beach sounds in the background. You have to listen for that for clues. But yeah, it has to keep going. It's a long way until a potential next Magnus match. And also, that part I can say without being facetious. Obviously, I have no clue if I or anybody else would be on the team. I would guess Peter Heine is a reasonably safe bet, and Laurent has also been around for a while. But other than that, it's, of course, up to Magnus which direction he wants to go. I don't think Laurent, Peter, and myself, also being not that active, were such a big secret to have to keep in the last matches. But of course, if you bring in someone new, who, especially if they're opening specialists in certain lines, like Dubov in 2018 with the Sveshnikov, that you want to keep under wraps.
Right. I liked Peter's insight in the video about, like, needing these young guys because they're actively searching for novelties everywhere, you know. I mean, obviously, you guys have tons of opening knowledge, but just his insight about the people that are still competing, trying to climb to Magnus's level, it being good to have that young energy on the team.
Yeah, I do agree with that, even though it's very upsetting that Peter never gives me any credit for all my great opening ideas. And he always assumes, oh, this was Jorn's idea, right? This was Duo's, right? I've still, no, mine. Oh, really? No, it looked like that was his. No, but of course I agree with the point. First of all, to have this unbiased view and even unbiased use of engines. Like, we're all used to working with engines, but it feels like for the younger guys, I don't know, d4, knight f6, c4, g6, h4, it's just a perfectly natural move. While if you grew up with the set of beliefs that, you know, we want to occupy the center and keep our king safe, then it's harder to take these things seriously, while they just, yeah, I think have a fresher outlook on many of those things. So you need a balance.
Makes sense. Yeah. So save a spot for the old guys. All right, Jan, a couple more and then we'll let you go. Number one, you did not deny the possibility that you might be working on a chessable course in your Brinter Blitz. Can you comment further on that?
Yeah, as usual, I don't know a lot of details because I haven't done a lot of work. But no, I did this E4, E5 course, which I think is still going strong. Greg is out there promoting it on Twitter, so yeah, I rely exclusively on Greg for the promo. So I should do something against D4. In general, I try to do things that I need myself, so I'll work on a D4 repertoire. Probably, you know, classical try stuff. D5, E6, Knight F6, and take it from there. And so, yeah, that's the one I'm currently on. And after that, if I make it through that one and I'm happy with it, I might try my hand at a white D4 repertoire, which is tough because, as we debated earlier, if you're doing white repertoires, you can either say, yeah, this is equal, but maybe they don't know stuff, or maybe they missed that move. Or you can make up reasons why, okay, computer says it's equal, but it's easier to play for white for whatever reason. Or you can skip the best black choices, which I don't like doing. So it's rough in general to do white repertoires, and people, me included, are more comfortable doing black repertoires because you feel these are easier to stand the test of time. But I need some openings with white, so I'll get to that once, hopefully, I did a D4 black course.
Yeah, I mean, people, they shouldn't shoot the messenger. Listen, chess is a draw, newsflash. You know, what are we going to do about it? But I understand. And the Olympiad, it sounded like you're in negotiations to coach a team, perhaps a team you've coached previously.
No, I don't think I've coached that team previously. I might have been on that team previously.
Oh, interesting. Now, could you play as well? Like rating wise, were you like, no thanks, I'd rather coach, or are you not quite there?
No, I think I'll do both. As the coach, I'd be in charge who's on the team. So might as well cash in double. I'll put myself on the bench.
Okay.
No, but seriously, no, I won't be playing. I think rating wise, I'd be eligible. But often they put in these lists. No, they put in these requirements for inactive people like me that you need to play, I don't know, 30 games within the last 8 years to make the team. Like, it's feeling like ding here. I don't have the time to go on a 30 games bender.
You want me to organize an event for you?
I don't know. I always thought, and I'm sure this is a much debated topic in the chess world, that if I played a 200 game match against one of my 1500 friends, I probably could win all the games and I'd be in the top 10, right?
Yeah.
What's stopping anybody from doing that? Would FIDE say, no, you're abusing the system? Or do people just not have that kind of criminal energy?
I think there are rules about it, but
would the rule be? It's an honest match. They can bring as many arbiters as they want, 2 games per day.
We'll have to answer this question in your 6th visit to this podcast. We'll reconvene after doing some research.
Maybe can we combine that we find an adult improver who's interested in playing 2 games a day against the grandmaster? Win-win.
Yeah, exactly. That sounds good. All right, Jan, last thing. Since you guys aren't doing recommendation station yet on Chicken Chess Club, any pop culture recommendations for myself and our listeners?
Let me think. We haven't talked series for a while. As I lead a very busy life, it's rough to keep track of stuff. Let me think. I'm watching the NBA playoffs. You might have heard of those.
I've heard of it. Good series, Except for the Sixers. Don't get me started. But anyway.
How's Embiid doing? Back for game 3?
I mean, game 3 will have happened when this comes out, but I'm going to say yes. But I think they'll lose the series anyway.
There you go. Other than that, pop culture. Oh, I watched this movie Coda, which I think won the Academy Award. And you might not think of me as a very emotional person, but I did cry throughout the last half hour. It's such a tearjerker. It's not even fair.
Okay, Coda.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's a great movie, but it's very touching. Other than that, what am I watching? The classics, Fleabag? You've seen Fleabag, I guess, right?
I haven't. I'm familiar with it.
Watch Fleabag. Come on.
Okay. On it.
I watched 2 Barry? Seasons.
You watching Barry?
I couldn't get into Barry. The tone was too weird. I couldn't tell. Is it a drama, a comedy? Am I rooting for this guy against him? Do I not care? I didn't get it. I understand everybody loves it. I couldn't do it. Leave me alone, Barry, with your acting classes.
I heard you mention White Lotus.
White Lotus is great, yeah. It's just 6 episodes.
That was really good. Yeah. Atlanta?
I'm still stuck in season 2. I have a lot of Atlanta catching up to do. Like, these things, they pile up. Succession is also excellent. I've only seen season 1. I haven't made it through. I use my time to watch very intellectual stuff like C. Have you heard of C?
No.
It's like Game of Thrones. There's Jason Momoa as a tribe leader, but the catch is everybody's blind.
Whoa.
But they're still excellent at killing each other, like expert level killing each other, even though they're blind. So I did watch 2 seasons of C.
Okay.
And I watched Reacher, which is also...
Oh, yeah, we watched that. That was
a lot of expert killing.
Seriously mindless, yeah. That was A-plus mindless.
So, yeah, my tastes are... I feel they're getting more lowbrow by the day, because we're old, Ben. I just want to lie on the couch, watch an episode of The Office, and fall asleep thinking, wow, that Michael Scott, he's not that good as his job.
Jim and Pam, what's going
to
happen?
Jim and Pam, stop being mean to Dwight. You're the true villains.
Okay, all right. And last question, comedians, any new recommendations?
I shouldn't mention this. I'll lose a lot of fans. Because I'm so famous. I went to see Louis C.K. in Berlin, and I wasn't sure if that's
allowed.
That's a proper thing to do. My friend had tickets, so I tagged along. I wasn't into it, maybe because the way we feel about Louis C.K. But yeah, I didn't find his act great. I did the opener, one of the openers, a Norwegian guy I had never heard of, and I've since forgotten his name. I think it's Daniel Robertson or something like that. Funniest guy I've ever seen.
Like, wow.
He doesn't have much on YouTube, but he does have, I think, a bit on Fallon, 5 minutes or something like that, which was close to what he did on the show. I mean, incredible guy, but it also just hit my humor centers of deadpan awkwardness.
And you're not just saying that because he's Norwegian and you work for Norwegian?
I've literally never met a funny Norwegian. This is a first.
Interesting. You're going to get fired. All right. All right, Jan, amazing as always. Thank you. Chicken Chess Club listeners, Apple Podcasts, write a review. It makes a big difference. Give them the 5 stars on Spotify. You know, lavish them with praise on social media. Share widely. We need to support this endeavor. We need it in our lives. So anything to add, Jan?
I couldn't agree more. And thanks for your support of our little podcast project, because I think of you, I'm not sure if it's still true, as the only chess podcast out there. So thank you so much for welcoming us into the space. And yeah, it's fun doing.
Good. Looking forward to more. Far from true that I'm the only one now, but I'm definitely excited for Chicken Chess Club. All right, Jan, we'll let you get back to either Twitch streaming or eating pizza on the couch. Much appreciated, as
picking
always.
Picking up my kids in the cargo bike from the dentist. That's my real life.
Okay.
Suburban grind.
Excellent. You gotta stream that on Instagram, Jan.
Yeah.
All right, take care.
Cheers. Bye, Ben.
Thanks to everyone who helps make Perpetual Chess possible. Big shout out to my producer, Matthew Passy. I'd also like to thank the Blue Wire Podcast Network, with whom we are proud to be affiliated. Be sure to follow us on social media, Benny Fischel 1 on Twitter, at Perpetual Chess on Instagram, or you can join the Perpetual Chess Facebook group. You can email me, ben@perpetualchesspod.com. And of course, last but not least, I'd like to give major thanks to the Perpetual Chess Patreon and PayPal supporters. Those who choose to join that community based on their level of support can do things like submit questions for guests of the show, have access to live Zoom Q&A lectures with grandmasters who often have appeared on the show, going over chess games, answering questions, stuff like that. And you can even get access to ad-free Perpetual Chess if that's your preference. So, but most of all, thanks to everyone for listening, and we will catch you all on the next episode.
Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.